This is Greg Carroll, and you're about to dive into Talking Schmidt.
Hey,
Talking Schmidt.
I'm already not watching.
It's cool, like tonight is the night.
Damn, this is like the coolest thing I'm ever gonna do.
I wouldn't say it was fun.
What do you mean? Well, Christian Fletcher's younger brother.
Fuck the Dodgers.
Our big dog's in. What do you think, Dolan?
Beyond Schmidt.
Talking Schmidt.
Alpha Macaroni.
Most of these guys, their opinion don't matter.
Talking Schmidt, right?
It's skateboarding.
I remember that.
Talking Schmidt.
What are Yuns doing?
Holy shit.
Skateboarding homies.
No, Schmidt, you can't jump in.
What is happening?
I'm here for Greg Smith. Yay!
Gregory.
Wi-Fi check one, Wi-Fi check two.
We're back in the fucking Schmidt Club.
I got this thing. So I did this thing for Phil, made this video. It came out, premiered it, and it should be hitting the web if it hasn't already. It should be out there any second. When I was doing that, I talked to some think guys, obviously, but I also talked to some real guys. The gist I got was that there was some forced tension between Deluxe and Think.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've
Do you feel that?
I mean, I just found this thing the other day, dude. It's a copy. No, it's the actual fax. Me and Thebo used to fax each other in the mornings. Every once in a while. Just like, you know, this one's like, hey, dude, you know, my mom just had to put $1,000 down on this attorney so I can get out of this court case that I'm in right now. You know, and by the way, Henry needs some stuff. You know, because Henry was staying with me and Mike at the time. On a business level, Fausto and Eric beefed a lot.
Yeah.
Eric had Deluxe, Fausto had Street Corner. And they both had Irmico. But those dudes would just fucking, like, it got really bad towards the end. But as far as like not skating with each other, like, I think what it, for me personally, it was more of like, okay, dude, we're gonna go out and shoot with Bryce today, mm-hmm. or we're gonna go shoot with Luke. You know, we're doing Think stuff. And it wasn't like we decided like we're not gonna go fucking skate with these dudes. Mm. You know, but I remember specifically being in the van with Think and real guys. And sitting out in a parking lot, and Eric Swenson was this. And he's like, okay, what do I fucking do with these guys? Who's the fucking guy on their team, man? Who do we gotta concentrate to turn pro? Like, what are we doing? And I was like, Matt Field. And he was like, what? I was like, dude, this dude got so much charisma, his style, his finesse, his attitude. He talks to kids. He's originally from the East Coast. He's got this rad fucking vibe. Turn him fucking pro. And Eric was like, okay. You know, so I never even thought about the fact that we didn't skate the city together. Because we went on, I mean, there's photos of us in Japan together with Matt Field and a couple of the other, like, real dudes and, you know, stereo dudes. And, you know, even when, like, American Dream was over there, I was fully backing Aliash on that one, dude, and Ron. You know, it was like, okay, this is, like, next level. And even, like, when Jordan Richter was going to do Family out of there, I think it was called.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
Yeah, it was like, I'm fully down for this, dude. You know, there's, like, so many people that were going to do things or did things out of Deluxe that, you know, I was supportive, but there was an inner, I'm going to put this so it sounds okay. I love Jeff Clint, but that dude used to come over to our warehouse, and like my office was right here, and I don't know if you remember, but you could walk through right to the art department.
Yeah.
And this dude would walk in and be like, wow, this is cool. You guys are doing all this shit. And then a couple weeks later, fucking Deluxe had it. And then they would do shit before us.
Right.
And that kind of got me pissed. So me and Keith at one point, like, you're not allowed to go in our fucking art department anymore, bro. It's easy to tell you're poaching, motherfucker. Like, don't, you know. And all due respect, I love Jeff Clinton, and rest in peace, you know.
Yeah.
But no, dude, I never put that together, you know, and the riders hung out as far as I could tell. We would skate spots sometimes, you know, China Banks or whatever, but.
Yeah, it's just a perspective I heard from a couple people, so it's like.
Yeah, I mean, again, like we went on tours together. We were in Europe together. You know, we went to South America with some of the real dudes. You know,
yeah. Talk about the Ecuador trip. Do you remember much of that? Because that's such a randomest crew ever. You look at the photo, and you're like, it's like Jake's guys, your guys. I think Jesse Pias.
Pias was there. Yeah.
Was Mike there?
Yeah.
Yeah, like it's just like the most eclectic crew at a fucking full pipe in Ecuador.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was beyond Ecuador. It was Peru, Ecuador, and Venezuela. And it's funny because they had Hellride, and I think Smythe might have made this up. It was Hellride.
Oh.
They had the Hellride dudes. They're all gnarly, you know, Archimedes and Jake and a couple of those other dudes, yep. You know, and Mickey Reyes. And then they had me with my whole crew. And it was like, it was rad because it was like that. I think that right there opened up the door for later on when like a lot of the girl tours were mixed with like anti-hero, you know, there was never like this weird, like we're not going to support each other. It was like this rad, you know, combination of the teams. But that trip was crazy, bro, because it was like, I don't think we had an agenda.
Was that the one where Hewitt got the cover?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's another one that was with us, dude.
Yeah.
I love that dude skating. He's a good person, man.
Yeah, he's the best. You know,
and that's the thing. It's like Cardiel, everybody there obviously had their own style, their own agendas. The Hellride guys, by the time we got to Venezuela, like some of those dudes already went home. They couldn't handle it, burnt themselves out with the partying or whatever it was.
Sure.
But like being... You know, and Solomon Ga was with us, dude. And I remember, I think it was Solomon or maybe it was Lance Dawes was like, fuck, dude, we're in Peru, bro. We're going to go to Machu Picchu. You know, and at the time, Solomon's reading this book, like the Celestine Prophecy. And I didn't know that it was about like energy and Machu Picchu stuff in there or something. I was like... So you got to check this out, bro. I was like, I don't know. I don't read books right now. Like, whatever. Like, what? But anyway, like, because Lance sparked it, dude, like a bunch of us went to Machu Picchu.
Sick.
And I just found photos of us hanging out. Like, Jesse Pies doing a backflip off this wall hella high at Machu Picchu. But, you know, like, we go to a skate park in Peru, I think it was, or maybe it was Ecuador, where we didn't know where we were going to stay. And some random kid, maybe it wasn't random, I don't know, but this dude shows up and he's like, oh yeah, you know, you could probably stay at this house. And I thought it was his parents' house. And like, I don't know if his mom or somebody's mom owned like a shuttle bus company. So they picked all of us up and drove us to this dude's like estate. Like, bro, this dude had like crazy multi-million dollar sculptures and photographs and paintings like all over this. I was like, what the fuck, a pool? They're like, oh, we can fill it up for you guys. And we're like, it's like a square pool with, you know, not gonna skate or whatever. But it was just like the so much fun. Like no holds barred, do whatever you want, stay out. Like dudes are doing crazy shit, but the skateboarding level, like, yeah, like you said, Peter Hugh, you know, Hewitt getting that cover, the stuff that, you know, we were all hanging out, having a good time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always remember this chick in Ecuador, like, ¿Dónde es Mickey? Where's Mickey? Like, oh, Mickey.
Mickey was the ladies' man back then.
This dude, like, wow, bro.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, it was fun, man.
Sick.
You know, and the thing is, though, you know, we're on that trip, you know, like I said, some of the Hellride dudes bailed out pretty early. Or midway, but we were all stuck together, and on the way home, we find out that one of our friends was murdered. Like me and Mike and Rick, you know, this guy Henry Browning, you know, he's murdered like execution style over here at I think it was Hollywood Billiards parking lot. You know, they found him in his car. You know, and we were just like, that was one of the first youth childhood deaths that we had to experience.
Damn.
You know?
So that's then, like a heavy one.
Yeah, that was heavy for all of us to process on the plane, on the way home.
Ooh.
Yeah. And Choppy.
Choppy was there?
Choppy Omega. You know, my brother had a lot of anxiety, and I remember Choppy I don't know what he had, dude, but I think probably maybe some Xanax or some shit. And, you know, Mike, Ted took some Xanax and so did Choppy. And I remember looking over and Choppy had his feet in, like, you know where we put the magazine?
Yeah.
He had his feet over there trying to get comfortable. And the steward and the waitress, stewardess, whatever, they were like, what in the fuck is wrong with you guys? Like, you know, Jake and these dudes are getting drunk and all this wild shit. You know, but it was like that experience being down there was so beautiful and so fun and so new. And for me, I was like, you know, damn, I should have took Spanish.
Yeah.
I would have been able to hook up with so many more chicks. You know, funny agenda. But, you know, it was fun. But that news on the way home was devastating. And then, and that was like, I think that was probably the beginning of this domino effect. Then it was Kit. Then it was Phil. And then, but on the peripheral, because I was in this other communities of like tattoo artists and artists, graffiti, you know, some gangster dudes, and like people just started going, and it was just like, for me, I remember my friend Janelle, shout out Janelle, I love you, she called me one day and she's like, dude, are you okay? I was like, what do you mean? She's like, it's like every other fucking week, every other month you got somebody going. I was like, wow. And that was one of the first people in my life that ever asked me if I was okay. Because I was always fucking, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Got to be strong. Got to power through. Don't show emotions. Be a fucking, you know, this way, you know. And to lead into the, you know, like the Phil stuff, you know, like going to that documentary, not even, it wasn't, to me, it wasn't like a documentary. It was almost like a celebration of his life video. You know, because documentary would have walked in through like, all these timelines of his life and every single aspect of his life. This was more of like, let's fucking honor this dude. Let's let people know how a rad of a person he was, a person, than a skateboarder.
Yeah.
You know, and to, I remember me and Jake Nunn, I think it was Jake, maybe it was Zach Martin, we were like, dude, did you hear him laugh? Fuck. I missed that laugh, dude.
Yeah. No, for sure. I mean, I was tripping on it reflecting because I just got the text from Poncho, like, I'm coming. And it was so last minute. And to me, like, so many people that were there were, it's all important to me.
Yeah.
But Poncho making that effort, like, I'm driving up by myself.
Yeah.
I talked to my wife. She's like, you got to get there. And I was like, this is gonna fucking rule.
Yeah, dude.
Like, it, and that gave me the confidence, like, because, you know, I make this thing and you're nervous, like, all these people are seeing it for the first time. That thought was not even in my head. I was like, dude, it's a reunion. Greg, Keith, fucking Zach and Jake flew out from Texas.
Yeah.
Like, people want to be together.
Yeah.
And me and McKenny were reflecting, we're like, dude, you're looking over at the adrenaline team being together for the first time in who knows how long.
Yeah.
You, Keith, and Fish together in one room, 10, 20 years.
It's 20 years,
like,
at least.
Like, all these people, Hansi Driscoll's there, like, Minor, fucking, and you're just like, this is my whole life in skateboarding.
Yeah. This is
like,
my,
in a room, just like, ba-ba.
Yeah, this is my chosen family.
It's pretty.
It was massive, dude, for me, because, you know, I'm riding off the wave of going to Epicenter for Jacob Rosenberg, and that was like a EMB reunion.
Right, the week before, yeah. I think. Yeah.
And then I'm grieving that Embarcadero's gone.
Yeah.
Like stepping on the bricks and like borrowing somebody's board and rolling on the bricks for the first time and being like, this place is about to just disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And then coming to your event and seeing even more people that are part of the chosen family. Like, I'm walking, I park my truck in North Beach, and I'm walking up towards these restaurants to meet up with Jake and Zach, and Fish and Johnny Marshall are walking down the street. They're like, yo, what the fuck? I'm like, divine intervention, bro. You know, and to see, you know, both those dudes doing good, and it was cool, man. And then to walk into this restaurant that I used to frequent on like a regular when I was hanging out in San Francisco, going out on the weekends.
Yeah.
You know, and reconnecting with the woman who was the waitress and being like, yeah, man, what's up with Anna? You know, her son skated. I gave him, she goes, that's my son. Thank you for hooking up my son. you know, and then coming to your show and hanging out in front and like seeing Keith and Fish and bonding that like that away again.
Jeremy and Freddie.
Dude, so many people.
Yeah.
You know, and even walking outside and seeing Wingding, Mike Kao out front. I was like, yo, that to me was like, oh my God, dude, to know that he's alive and doing good and fucking looking good, man. And, you know, connecting with Poncho and then Poncho walking out afterward and like spending extra time together and connecting with Dan Azzaretta. And I was just like, this is something that I think is really unique to skateboarding. That like a person that's Phil Hsiao crosses over, we grieve for still to this day, you have the ability to put all this footage together, edit it, blood, sweat, and tears, yours and a lot of us that got filmed for that video, and have to sit there and relive other people's trauma with them, your own trauma, and having to like step back and be like, okay, I need to take a couple days, maybe a week or so, to like regroup my own emotional state, because the connection that you and Phil have is beyond even me. Mm-hmm. Even though towards the end, me and him were like together on a regular basis almost every day because he was across the street. But it's like your guys' bond was like beyond. Like I said in the beginning of this interview, it's like he brought you in.
Yeah.
You know? And he was a key element to the success of Think Skateboards.
Yeah. You know? I think one of the things that you said that really stuck to me and touched my heart was you're like, when I saw Phil skate, it verified that I wanted Think's whole team to be ATVs. Yeah. Like I wanted them to skate everything because I saw the way this dude did it. Trahobel's doing it, you know, and all of a sudden these guys, that's the team. And you talk to Lance Dawes and like, what, dude, Lance is seriously one of the best. I love
forever,
the dude.
Forever,
he talks
dude.
The right game. He just, he's
he
got the edge,
either.
The attitude and the knowledge, everything. It's so perfect. Mm-hmm. And he's like, dude, you take Think to a demo? Nobody's got it like that.
Yeah.
Nobody. Yeah. Like Trahobel, Wade, Phil. And I'm just like smiling. I'm like,
there's a dude. There's a dude for every obstacle.
Yeah. And it was just blow out the demo. No matter what you set up, these guys could skate it. And not only that, they wanted to go skate your spots no matter what they were.
Yeah.
And
they could skate your spots no matter what they were.
Really
no matter
well.
How janky it was or how good it was. It was like, this is some new shit. Let's try it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was a success for sure, but it was an emotional thing that actually peaked the right way because I was so scared that like, I mean, this is a horrible story and we're all like still grieving it, but the way that it was unfolded, and shout out to Tony and Thrasher for like finding a fucking theater in Chinatown right by China Banks. I was like, this is too perfect. Like you can't even write this shit. Like, and so, but the emotion that seeing everybody just hug and like, what's Wingding and JJ Rogers doing in the same, you know, like you have all these different guys coming together.
Unity.
And that is what I would say is Phil.
Yeah.
And you said it in the doc was like, he liked Mozart. He liked to laugh. He liked to have fun, like all these things. And that's what this video is, because that's what Phil was.
Exactly.
And it's like you see like McKenny crying, but then him fired up and like all these different things. It's like, that's why we all are friends, because we have that similar dude that we all were just like.
Yeah. Yeah. He was the one. This is a trip, man. He set the mold. Mm. Like you said, like when I saw him, I was like, okay, ATVs. He's the one who set the mold of like, this is going to be a team where we got people like Wade Spire. To this day, besides Danny Way, one of the best ATVs ever. Mm. Like him and Danny, to me, in my opinion, and maybe, you know, yeah, I mean, and then you got Wade in there, and I mean, Phil in there too, and then, you know, Drehobel.
Yeah.
You know, and even the younger dudes, you know, when Zach came in, he was fucking beast on street and mini ramps.
People don't even know about Zach Martin, man.
Yeah, dude. But, you know, and then you got guys that everybody kind of knew their position, and there was times where I even told, I mean, Phil, I think he got hurt or something or whatever. Maybe I've said this before, but it's like, bro, you don't need to skate. Mm. Like, you've skated all these other demos. Just fucking take a day off, dude. Let your body rest and sit down and talk to these kids.
Yeah.
You will sell more fucking boards because you talk to the kids. And he was like, what? I'm like, dude, you got the gift of gab, bro. You're good with people. And then, dude, I look over and he's got like 30 kids just like, burr. I'm like, yeah, bro. Like, you know, and a lot of the other guys did that too, you know, and it was like, at the time it was like, he set the mold, but then I had guys like Zuanich, who almost like on that one big tour was like a co-team manager.
Right.
For me. I was like, fucking hey, dude, this dude's got it, bro.
He was the can-do guy.
Yeah,
like, he was like, Fausto's right-hand man. Yeah. Can you do this? Yeah, I'll figure it out.
Yeah, that's after that tour is when that happened for him and Fausto.
Okay.
Because he had some kind of hotel discount card that his parents had, like 50% off.
Oh.
So, dude, we were staying in like 5-star hotels for half the price. They were still like $250 a night probably, but they were like $500 rooms, and we were like... I remember being in Chicago, I think it was, and like we're at this big banquet table. Everybody's got Think Gear, and this lady comes up. Are you guys some kind of like baseball team? And we're like, no, we're skateboarders. And she was just like, what? Because it's almost every hotel dude was fancy, and we're just like grimy coming in boards. Mm. And they were like, whoa. And I remember like it was like a rock star kind of thing. And we were just having fun, skateboarding, having fun, doing our thing, you know, picking up people along the way. And it was like me, I had the van. I think we had maybe like two vans at one point. Drobel had his white car that he just got, you know, and we're just going, you know, 72 days. I almost lost my mind on that one.
Is that the one Bob Reynolds was on? Because I know Bob almost lost his mind on one of those ones. They almost crashed, and I think Phil had his black car. There was a bunch of satellite cars.
Yeah,
I didn't go on that one, but...
Yeah, that was nuts, dude.
Yeah, and then Bob, the day they got back, drove over the middle divider on Highway 17 somehow, and I had to go pick him up in Santa Cruz. Like, he was so fried, he fucking drove...
I don't even remember that.
Yeah, it was so crazy, but...
Yeah, dude. Wild times, man. But fun.
What do you think, like, is there something that sticks out as... not the most insane, but like just from beginning to end, this was one of my favorite trips.
Yeah. Australia. Yeah. With Pius. And the rest of the dudes.
Is that the one where you did that long rail on a hill?
Yeah, there was a long rail. That's the picnic table set up vertically, and those dudes are going over that bump.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot of rad demos. I was still skating a lot back then. Mm. And the vibe, you know, was really cool. And shout out to Aha from, you know, the distribution company down there. You know, super good dude. He had like one of the most pro schedules ever, dude. Like, I found it. It's like a full like spiral notebook kind of book thing with all the printout of where we're going, how long we're going to be there with all the hotels, like everything, dude. Mm. It was just, for me, I was like, I could just, you know, almost kill this because I was driving the van. I made it into the right turn lane. And when, you know, like, wow, they're like, dude, it's not SF. You know, but dude, and like hanging out with Chad Ford, you know, he was a Dogtown Venture dude, you know, he was like a boss mode dude, like club scene guy down there, you know, and just... super fun, man.
Where you met Brett Margaritas? Was he already involved?
He was already involved. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. It was rad, dude. We went from like all the way up from like Byron Bay, Gold Coast, all the way down to Melbourne. But we would went out to like Wollongong and like hit all these like crazy spots, and it was like super fun. And like Phil was ripping, dude. All the dudes, everybody was ripping, dude. And it was just like, that was one of the ones that stuck out for me because it was like, my dudes are killing it, you know? And then there was, you know, obviously the Europe tours, and there was one where it was me, Wade, Phil. I don't know if Drehobo was there, probably, but we went to like Proctice, Czechoslovakia, with Thibo, the Gons, Bob Burnquist, Max Schaff, and we're skating some mini ramp in the middle of like the no war zone. It was like just this beautiful green field with a mini ramp at the end. And like, dude, we're all like, oh my God, dude, we're on tour of the Gons. Like, I was like, oh my God, this is fucking amazing.
Yeah.
And then watching Bob, like that's when Bob just got on Anti-Hero, I think.
Oh shit.
And I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
This is next level skateboarding.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, man. I mean, those tours were super fun. Going to Japan with Jake Nunn and Poncho and Fish. But then the other Think tour with Pales and Wade and Drehobo, Fish, me, a bunch of dudes into Japan was super rad. Like, anytime I was on tour with those dudes, it's not like one single thing. But then I think the peak was Damage. You know, going around filming with those dudes and seeing what they were capable of, you know, and I probably annoyed the shit out of them. I remember telling Dan, just like, dude, just lean this way and do this way. And he's probably like, shut the fuck up, dude. You're not even skating. But that was my mind. I was like, I would see lines that I wanted to do. And yeah. I knew with Dan, I could be like, hey, dude, try this.
Yeah, it's like you're playing a video game. Hey, your ability could go do this thing I want you to do.
Exactly. And it worked, dude. And like that, right. And to see how Dan and Phil and Paul stepped up to edit it at Mike Shaw's house, you know, and I was like, whoa, dude.
That was fucked. That was when I started getting into like seeing what editing was. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't know this, and you'll probably find it out in the documentary, but it's pretty subtle and quick, is that in those days that they were editing tape to tape. So once you had a section, it was you can't go back and add things. So the last, towards the end of the whole process, that huge day at China Banks happened, and that's why all that footage is in the credits, because it was like, the video's almost done already. Yeah. We can't put it in our parts.
Yeah, there was
Except for, I think, Drehobo might have had the last part, and so he had, I think, a clip in his part, but yeah, people always ask me, like, why is that in the credits? Like, the best shit. And you're like, yeah, because there was no computers.
There was no
back
Pro
then.
Tools.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there was no editing. Like, I mean, it was kind of an editing bay, but it wasn't like it is now where you can just drag and drop digital shit. It was like, no, this is coming off of fucking high eights, man. And then there was a little bit of, you know, the VX1000 in there.
I got a trivia question.
Okay, hopefully I got an answer.
If you remember or not, Rob Dyrdek quit Venture. Mm-hmm. Why?
This is funny, man. So Rob quit to start Silver Trucks or some shit, but didn't tell me that he's quitting. And he was still getting a check. Granted, at the time it was probably $100 or whatever. So we're in Canada, and me and Cochran are I think it was a hotel or maybe it was a club or some shit, and Rob's in there playing pool or whatever, and I fucking checked him. I was like, dude, you're a fucking bitch, bro. You don't have the balls to fucking call me up and quit, or I said something like that, and you're still getting a fucking check, dude. Fuck you. You know, I was pissed, but you know, we were young, you know, still, and it was just, it's funny, man. But you know, then, you know, to see what Rob has done with himself, and you know, honestly though, when he was riding for Alien and Venture at the time, like we would talk regular, and I was like, dude, like you guys are fucking killing it, bro. Like Alien was like one of the top shit.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know if he was on DC yet or what that was going on, but I was like, dude, what are you doing with your money, man? And he was smart back then. Like he started, I think he was one of the first guys that I knew of that started investing into like apartment buildings. I think he bought a bunch of apartment buildings in Dayton or something, you know? And then to see, you know,
real estate
stuff and whatever, whatever. And Colin McKay, like his dad really was like instrumental in helping those guys,
okay,
you know, with finances. But we never had that kind of guidance.
One last thing on Think. I wrote this down. If you could sit down with your younger self during the Think era, what would you tell him?
Fuck, dude, that's a gnarly one.
Do you feel like fucking the song No Regrets, I Did It My Way, or do you look back and go, I learned a lot and I could go back and do things a little differently if I had a second chance?
A little bit of both, actually. I think that's a good way to, I did it my way, but my way was molded by Fausto and Keith and Eric.
Yeah.
I think that I stepped into a role and a personality and an image that I felt like I had to be that way in order to be in this camp. You know, but one thing I will give credit to Fausto for, by proxy kind of, is he taught me how, and again, by proxy, not telling me, sitting me down and like, this is how you do this, how to speak up for myself, how to believe in myself. He did sit me down one time when I got back from Tampa. He's like, all right, man, the fucking industry fucking loves you. You're a fucking announcer. Like, what the fuck? You know, you're like the Gandhi of skateboarding. What the fuck? You Gandhi of skateboarding, dude? What are you talking about, you weirdo? You know, I was like, I'm just fucking do what I do, man. And he's like, yeah, but you're funny. You're talking shit to people. You know, you got the vibe. And I was like, right on. You know, and that's segued into me going to the first X Games and being like the team organizer for X Games. And then the Bostics asked me about being the mic guy before, you know, or me and Duncan together, or me before Duncan. I don't remember how it went down. Yeah. And I even met with like one of the main dude from the music group, the Tubes. They took me to dinner with the guy, and he was talking about the Olympics and shit, and I was like, fuck this. Yeah. But I got back and I still wanted to work with the X Games, and then Fausto was like, fuck them, you're not working with them. Da, 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 da. And I was like, wow, my trajectory could have been on a whole nother level, dude.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not that it's a regret. It's like I'm a product of the environment. I have this way in my, I mean, dude, we were kids in survival mode. Like, you're gonna pay me to do what? Okay. And then, you know, being around certain people that were doing certain ways to make money, I was like, okay, I can do that too.
Right.
So then, you know, and then I remember, you know, God bless him, Lance Dawes, I guess, narked me out to Fausto. And Fausto pulled me into one of his offices in Irmico, and he was like, you're fucking dealing drugs. What the fuck? I'm like, I don't make enough money, bro. I got me. I got my girlfriend. I got her daughter. I got my house. I got all these fucking bills, bro, and I'm not making shit. Because when the day I got my first check from Think, no more venture check.
Oh.
He's like, you can't be double dipping. I was like, I didn't say this to him. I'm like, motherfucker, you're like quadrupled.
Yeah.
You got High Speed, you got Deluxe, you got Irmico, you got Pointech, you got Street Corner. Like, what the fuck? You know? But it is what it is, you know? So it's like, do I regret anything? I regret not being able to take care of the team financially. The way I feel like they deserved it. I regret having to kick Wade Spire off. That was the fucking stupidest shit ever.
That one lives with you forever.
Forever, bro.
Every time I see you, if we get talking, that comes up.
Yeah, because it's a fucking traumatic time. I mean, and me and Wade are still friends. Like, I reach out to him, he reaches out to me every once in a while. You know, it's all good. There's no bad blood. I love all the dudes.
Hall of Famer Wade Spire.
Yeah, man. But it's like, I think about what would have happened if Fausto didn't say what he said to Keith. What would have happened? Like, will we still be there? Would Think still be going? Because it's a fucking great name. Mm-hmm. It's a great culture that we created. It was a great vibe that we created. We had an incredible team. Maybe we could have still got, it still would have been good. Maybe I would still live in the Bay, bro. But then I think, like, it's the chain of events, like leaving Think, leaving Girl, going to do an Empire, that whole economy crash fucking us over. To me, sitting on a log in San Francisco, man, like, oh my God, dude, this is the first time I've in my life I've never had a brand attached to my name. Like, who the fuck am I? What am I doing? Then that took me to like, well, you've been coaching people for 20 years already. Like, why don't you just do that?
So did that, that's what, I mean, we should end with that. Is that kind of coming out of, I'm a team manager / babysitter almost, like helping these dudes get through life. They're all around me. And then how did you get into the whole life coaching?
Right. So again, like, so in 2007, Rick Ibiseta's cousin and I started a life coaching company.
Oh.
Yeah, it was called Peace Academy. Positive Education Awakens Conscious Excellence.
Rick I is the best.
Yeah, so, but we started doing that, and then because of what was happening with the economy, I had to shut down Empire, you know, and I had a meeting with Kevin and be like, look, dude, I'm not going to be able to focus on this. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. Like, you know, maybe you need to get back into real estate. I remember he was pissed at me because this dude was like 22 at the time, like baller. Oh. Real estate dude, lost everything, you know, but then now he's like mega real estate, you know, guy doing really good. Okay. But through that, somehow, I don't remember how this connection happened, but Kevin hit me up and he's like, hey, dude, this guy's having this event. You should come check it out. So I was like, all right, this is before we started the company together. And I was like, all right. And I go down there and it's like this whole like inspirational kind of life coaching thing for like real estate or whatever. Fucking, I was like, this is dope, dude, but I want to do this for kids. And Kevin was like, I want to do this for kids, bro. I got this whole idea about kid millionaires, but it's not about money. It's about millionaire mindset. How do you teach them? And I was like, let's do this, bro. So we started Peace Academy, but then that was 2007. By 2009, Empire got shut down. But I was then like, oh my God, dude, what am I going to do? And then it came where, you know, well, you got this life coaching company. You're not doing anything with it. Why don't you just do that? That was kind of already a wrap, but I was like, okay. And then simultaneously, I get a call from Michael Fukuhara from Powell. And I'm sitting on the couch, you know, and he's like, what are you doing? I was like, what? He's like, this is Michael Fukuhara from Powell. Like, you know, this is Greg Carroll. I'm like, yeah. He's like, what are you doing? I was like, sitting on my couch. It's just, to me, this just came out of sideline, out of the blue. Like, what are you? And he was like, no, I mean, what are you doing, like, work-wise? I was like, I'm relaxing. He's like, well, you know, would you be interested in coming down and having a conversation with me and George? You know, I'm like, about what? You know, because this is when George Powell was like, nobody fucking liked this dude. Like, Rocco just annihilated him. And he's like, well, we want to relaunch Pal Peralta, and we're thinking maybe, you know, you could be the brand manager and help us bring it back.
Oh.
And I was like, do I get to work with Stacy? And they're like, well, just come down. We'll talk about it. So me and then my then pregnant wife drive down to Santa Barbara, and I literally consult for free almost all day to George Powell about why the industry doesn't like him, what he could do to switch it around, what we could do to bring Powell back. Like, they're just like, you know, this is all good. And I'm like, but, you know, and then he's pitching to me, do you want to do, you know, I know we talked about, like, you know, the brand manager for Powell, but would you be interested in doing a truck company? And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, yeah, well, maybe you could be a brand manager for a truck company. I was like, only if I get a piece. You know, he's like, what do you mean? I'm like, I want a partner on it. He's like, well, we don't do that. And then I said, then I don't do that, because I know how much money I helped Fausto and Eric make. I'm not doing that again.
Yeah.
You know, and he's like, well, we don't really do that, you know, but how much, you know, what are you looking for salary? I said, you know, with all due respect, somebody of my caliber, you know, this is going to be like, I think I said 185 a year. He's like, okay, that sounds right. And then he's like, I'll have a proposal to you, you know, in the next couple of weeks. So 2 weeks goes by, there's no proposal. I called him up and said, what's up, George? And he's like, oh yeah, I just FedExed it. You're gonna get it tomorrow. So I'm like, okay. Pick up the envelope. And I feel like a dagger shoot through my left shoulder into my heart. And I was like, fuck this dude, he's a piece of shit. You know? And my partner was like, what do you mean? You're not even gonna open it up? I was like, I don't need to, fuck this dude. So she's like, come on. So I pick it up and it's for a quarter of the salary that he offered me to be the brand manager for a truck company. And I was like, this is why nobody fucking likes this dude. Now Wade and Kristen told me stories about shit and then other dudes told me stories shit. All due respect, he's done a lot for skateboarding, but I called him up and I was like, George, what is this, bro? He's like, what do you mean? I was like, this is for a truck company, dude, for like 80 grand, bro. Like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, sorry, we don't have the Billabong salary to offer you. This is right around the time that Billabong came in and did the licensing thing with Plan B and all that.
Yeah.
And I was like, Billabong salary, bro? This has nothing to do with Billabong salary, though. This is why nobody fucking likes you, dude. You're a fucking dick. Huh. And I fucking... And that was it. And then I was like, whoa, shit, now I really got to figure this out.
Oh, shit.
Because it was 85 grand, and I had 15 grand in the bank at the time because I lost everything.
Oh.
Right, when Empire shut down. And then that's when I moved down to Southern California. I thought I was going to do real estate with Kevin Sturdivant, and that was a really good ego smash on me. Like, dude, I can't just get on the phone and fucking take orders. I got to fucking have people tell me to fuck off. You're doing cold calls.
Oh, man.
I was like, I can't do this, dude. So then at the time, one of my main spiritual kind of teachers lived right around the corner from me. So I just dove into that, and she helped me out a lot. But then that's when I got the phone call of my mom's husband killed himself and I needed to go help my mom. Gosh. And I hadn't seen my mom in 23 years. And that's a whole nother fucking dark realm. You know,
damn.
But that's what led me into going back into like Native American ceremonies and looking up with elders and like really getting people to like look after me and, you know, set me on path. And, you know, then through the Native American communities is when I got introduced to people. This dude who wanted to do detox centers differently than everybody else, working with Ibogaine. We were going to do something up here, but it's illegal. So we did, you know, he called me up. He's like, I'm going to move to Mexico, bro. I'm going to work for Crossroads, which is like a big detox center down there. And then he realized there was no spiritual shit to that. So he called me up. He's like, dude, let's do this. I want you to be the guy who does the ceremonies for Ibogaine. I was like, dude, you're talking about African stuff. I'm not African. I don't know anything. He's like, there's no ceremony to get people off of dope. You're going to be the one who does it. I know what you do. I've seen your work. You know, all these other, you know, ayahuasca girls are having you help them. You can do it. And I was like, fuck, all right. And I did it, dude. And I saw the most profound transformations within 24 hours.
Wow.
Full-blown tracked out people, dude. Just no more addiction, no withdrawal within 30 minutes after taking the medicine. And then it's just about life shift into creating a lifestyle protocol system for them to like really rehabilitate their mind, their body, their soul, like holistically.
Awesome.
You know? And I did that.
What a wonderful thing to see.
Oh, dude, it's beautiful.
Like,
man.
The result of somebody that, I mean, addiction is so gnarly. We've lost people and we've lost people physically and mentally. Like, people that are still here, we lost them to this addiction thing. And so, that's incredible. I mean, seeing even, detox isn't even, it's not, definitely not 60% even probably.
Like, no, dude, I mean.
You're rolling the dice.
Yeah, I mean, all due respect to the AA community and whatnot, you know, but in regular traditional Western detoxes, we had an 85% success rate.
Really?
Damn. You talk about regular detox in the United States, even AA stuff, you're talking maybe 15%?
Yeah.
A lot of relapse, a lot of stuff, because it's like, you know, and again, all due respect to that and the people that follow it, it's cool. You got to have something, but like going to an AA meeting and you've been clean for 30 years and sitting there like, hi, I'm Greg Carroll, I'm an addict. It's like, I'm not a fucking addict, dude. And my buddy one day said, they're like, you know when you're driving down the street, dude, and you lose control over your car and then you regain control over your car and you get home? And you recovered from that almost accident?
Yeah.
Are you still recovering from that accident when you get home? No, because you have control.
Right.
There you are, you're safe again.
Right.
You know, so like that affirmation of like, I'm still that addict, I don't have power over this, it takes away the essence of, I'm fucking gangster, dude, nothing is gonna fuck with me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know? But again, that works for some people. You know, so recently I got approached by a client of mine and said, hey, you know, would you ever think about getting back into detox centers? I was like, yeah, I would love to.
Right.
You know, so I've been consulting for these guys. They're getting ready to open up some detox centers in LA. But eventually integrating in integrative medicine work, like energy work, hands-on healing stuff like that I do, that my wife does with a bioresonance machine to test people. Can you even get on Suboxone? Or is this going to fuck you up? What else could we do? Or balancing your energy so you can, and like testing people and doing stuff where it's like mindset, healing people from the inside out and healing their family so that they can actually welcome this person back that stole from them, that lied to them, that maybe did some wild shit. You know, people got trafficked. You know, I've worked with some heavy duty stuff, but like to, again, holistic, WHOLE, to the entire community around them, family, friends, to like, okay, man, this person is not the person who did all that. Let that go. And sometimes people do relapse, and like, okay, hit the reset button. You don't have to fucking like, he's a fucking loser. Fuck him, look at him, he did it again. Mm-hmm. Nah, man. And it can be taxing on families. It can be brutal. But that's why you get social workers involved. That's why you get sober companions involved, people who can do that kind of stuff. But the industry, I've realized, a lot of these places, bro, they don't give a fuck. They want to keep people in their rehabs. They don't want them to get clean because they can do the billing.
Fuck.
You know, and there's alternative drugs right now. Like there's one, it's a chemist kind of invented drug that does very similar effects as getting people off of heroin and opiates as Ibogaine does, but there's no psychedelic experience. And that's, for some people, that's better.
Right.
But it's illegal.
It's illegal.
Yeah, and so is Ibogaine. You know, but Colorado's going to do something next year. I've just found out with my buddy, they're going to decriminalize a lot of the plant medicines, just like they did it in Oakland. Like, you can do Ibogaine over, but it's a federal offense still.
Okay.
But if there was an actual, it's going to happen, man. It's going to happen where there's going to be clinics now that open up that can do these Ibogaine treatments. But if they don't have the spiritual component to pull the entities out, to really go deep with these people, those people will probably relapse. You know?
Yeah, it's a tough one.
It's hard, bro. You know, and it's, you know, and then you got people who are like, oh, I'm gonna make money on this. I'm gonna open up a clinic. Charlatans, they don't know what the fuck they're doing. And people get hurt, people could die.
You know? It's a crazy world we live in when people are making money off people suffering. It's like when you saw those Malibu fires, and people were dressing up like construction workers and pretending they were, and robbing these houses people. That they just got their, and you're like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah.
It's like the lowest of low, tricking old people. Like there's this thing going on now where people call or email old people that aren't in tune with everything. And they're like, hey, and they get them to give them all this money. And you're like,
yeah, bro,
that's what you're doing.
Yeah. It's evil shit, man.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. There's certain people like myself that if we could do this for free, I would. But I got kids, I got a wife, I got a family.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh, dude, it's not about the money. Then give me your money so I can go help more people.
Yeah.
You know, and even like there's shit in California with the homeless people where there's these companies that start and they get all this grant funding and all this other stuff, billions, bro, and they don't give it to the community. They don't really help people get off the streets. Granted, there's certain people in those businesses that will actually do it. But like, I have a buddy who was just like, dude, I used to work in one of these places. Dude, they're shady as fuck. I'm like, wow, bro. You know, and it's just like, to me, I believe in karma. And I've, through the work that I've done now, I've taken initiations and vows to live a high level standard of integrity that I've never even had in my life. Like, there's certain things I just don't do, I don't get involved with, and I don't want to shit around me, you know, so that way the people know, like, okay, this dude is this kind of person, I'm gonna go to him. I'm not some dude who just took a fucking weekend workshop and I'm calling myself a fucking shaman,
right?
You know, it's like, no, dude, I have too much respect for the elders, the ways of doing things, and also the patient. You know, I love coaching people, man. I love helping people. And that, like, go back to what you said earlier. Yes, dude, it's organic from like raising my brother.
Right.
Not in a fucking really good way, dude. I was a dick, but I didn't know how else to do it. because you're coming from some dude who used to hit me or throw garbage on my bed and just like violence and all this shit. Not that I was super violent with my brother. Yeah, we got into regular fights, but it was shitty. Mm. We worked it all out. But like, it's about like being able to be who I am now compared to like who I was there. It's like people say, oh, people don't change. Motherfucker, I'm a living example of somebody who changed. And I know, I've seen it. I've seen full-blown Phoenix kind of transformations, dude.
Yeah.
Like, wow. Like, you are an incredible human being, man. Like, whatever you did before, it's okay.
It's been reoccurring in my life a lot lately, which is this statement. I heard it on the radio the other day. Like, shit's talking to me one night. Yeah. And it's like, nobody wants to be judged at their lowest. Everybody's made mistakes. Everybody's been fucked up. And imagine if you, at your worst, is what you're known for.
Yeah.
And it's like...
Yeah, yeah. Real quick, dude. When did that start coming to you? In the last few months?
Yeah.
Phil. It's Phil.
Probably.
Dude, I don't want to be known for my lowest.
Yeah.
Wild, dude.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, dude, you know, who does, man? You know, yeah, dude, you fucking head-butted Colt Cannon. Like, I could have fucking smacked this kid with my hands, but I didn't.
Yeah.
Oh, you did this, you did that. Like, really? Where on paper have you seen me super violent? Mm. I got this reputation of being fucking some dude who beat your ass. Yes, it's happened. But I'm not, like, how many? 10? Throughout my entire career, maybe. Then, but that's pre, you know, but then if you go to Embarcadero, it's like, okay, yeah, dude, yeah, we fucking protected our land, protected mm-hmm. each other. But to think that I'm some like violent, crazy drug dealer, fucking this, it's like, nah, dude, I'm a whole nother realm, dude. My wife's like, you're fucking boring. Like, can we go out and do stuff? Yeah, sure, let's go.
Yeah. It's, a difference between protecting your, like you said, protecting your land, protecting your people, protecting your family,
protecting yourself,
and all that stuff. It's and nowadays with the social media, I mean, I'm a broken record with this stuff. I could go on forever, but yes, everybody critiquing you from a, we call it an anonymous animosity.
Yeah,
it's people that are too afraid to just tell you who they are. First of all, so how can you even listen to shit talking from these people? It's like, Indy 169 said, this guy did this. And you're like, okay, who's Indy 169, you know?
Like, it doesn't fucking matter, dude.
It's all clickbait. Like, this whole era is all about...
Triggers.
Schadenfreude, which is the German word for having joy over other people's expenses. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah. your downfall is my pleasure. That's like the worst shit.
This goes back to propaganda media and how companies influence the kids.
Mm.
It's all shock value entertainment. Mm. Why? Because it's clickbait.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to, like, that's why the news, starting out with Dan Rather and fucking these other guys who started reporting on the war, and they realized, like, wow, we're having more people watch the violence than we do on, oh, we're going to rescue the cat out of the tree with the firemen.
Yeah.
Let's feed them all this shit. And then you go into, I mean, now you remember Faces of Death, the video?
Yeah.
My brother and Chico and those dudes had it in LA when I visited one time. I was like, yo, what in the fuck, bro? I don't want to watch this shit. Some dude like hitting by a bullet train just evaporating. Like, And then now it's normal to see people get murdered on social media. There's no filter, and the human psyche can't handle that. Right. First, it can't handle the amount of information you're seeing every 3 to 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Bam, bam, bam. It's too much. And then you add in the violence, and then you add into the fucking all this other crazy shit where you don't know who to believe, and it's like, no wonder people are depressed. No wonder people are having anxiety. No wonder people are getting on fucking meds, because you're so fixated on this thing that you can pick up every fucking second. Instead of just like, let me go walk from fucking Howard Street between 6th and 7th during the fucking hell realms of that area all the way to FTC. Mm. And then I'll walk all the way to Ocean Beach with my Walkman on, listen to Sade.
Mm.
how often do people just disconnect?
Yeah.
You know, that's why I feel like there's this dude. Oh my God, I'm blanking on his name. I'm sorry. What's the dude's name who rides for fucking Skate Mafia, but he don't have an Instagram?
Wes Kramer?
Yes. One of my favorite dudes.
That's my boy.
I don't even know the cat.
When you bring it, you gotta sing it.
I love Wes.
But the fact that he's like, nah. Other people put him out and all this shit. I'm like, fuck yeah, bro.
Yeah.
If I could give any advice to anybody out there in that realm, get off that shit for a minute. I wrote up a whole protocol, a 3-month detox off of social media.
Oh.
You know? And I was thinking about posting it and sending people, like, you want to get on it? Get a link. Because it's like, go fucking hang out. It's like when text messaging first came out. We started with, you know, Empire was going, text messaging was already out, but my daughter Michaela was with me, you know, and she was hanging out in the front office where she was there with me for a week or something like that. And I was like, you know, she was dating this kid at the time. I was like, yo, you ever talk to your friends? What about your boyfriend? She said, I talk to him all the time. I was like, I never hear you on the phone. She's like, I'm texting. I was like, what? Like, yep. You know, they don't talk on the phone. Like, you don't hear their voice. And she's like, yeah, whatever. So I'm driving her back to Sacramento. And they're, you know, those kids who sit in the corner, they got the signs and they're almost looking like a raver.
Yeah.
And she's laughing and fucking, she's like going to text him. Like, don't text him, call him and share what your experience is.
Yeah.
And she did, and they're both laughing and da-da-da, and she gets off the phone, she's smiling. I was like, see, there's a false reality thinking that you're really connecting with people on social media. It's false. It's Facebook. It's fucking bullshit. Like, let me show you who I am. It's like, you're not hearing the voice.
Right.
You're not calling the home phone to talk to fucking this dude, and you got to talk to his mom first, and then the brother wants to get on the phone and talk, and you're talking to the family, and there's like, it's a dismantling of unity, the connection do we have with each other. It's a false sense of like, oh, I don't have to call this dude. I know what Schmitty does. He's on his podcast. He's doing this. Like,
yeah.
I don't got to fucking hear this dude's voice. It's like, no.
Hmm.
If there was a sense of community and connection and like tribe again, and that's what skateboarding gave to all of us.
Blood Wizard. Blood Wizard. Blood Wizard. Blood Wizard! Shop.bloodwizard.com.
Tickety tack.
Hey, it's Corey at Blue Plate, 3218 Mission Street. Come see us. Meatloaf, fried chicken, deviled eggs, Dollar Olympia beers. We're here every day of the week. We got a garden and we got smiles on our faces. Come let us make you happy.
And now, another first impression from Timothy Donald McKenney.
That first impressions was the first time Greg was on our soil, in a sense, like we're in our backyard. I'm used to Greg being at EMB or, you know, like in the city or something, right? Or on a video. So my first impression was up at EMB and the first bencher hollows came out and the bass plates were too thin. So all the EMB kids were just breaking them and throwing them up above the three stair. And here comes Greg walking up. He takes one look at all the broken bass plates, jaw drops. You can tell he just turns around and went to call Keith, dude. It was fucking hilarious. But the first bencher bass plates were so thin, I'm pretty sure those kids were just putting them in the cracks and turning them to break them. So Greg comes up to like 30 of them broken. It's fucking hilarious. EMB was the best.
I had a bet with myself recently, which was, you know how they do like dry January, don't drink. Yeah. Imagine dry January is no any photos or text or anything.
No distractions.
Like, right. Would you get more phone calls? Would people be like, I don't know where this dude is. Like, he's not posting. He hasn't texted me, blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden, like, it's just a test, I guess.
It depends.
Like, would all of a sudden my friends be like, hey, you know what? I'm going to call this dude because I don't know what he's doing.
Yeah.
But if you see it all the time, you're like, I don't need to call him, like you said.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's just this thing that, like, I was telling Cheryl, is like, okay, we're old, yes, That means we've gone through many generations, which means we saw how it once was and we see how it is now, and we saw the transformation from that to here. But the weird part is seeing the pros and cons of all these different things that now's generation only knows now. Yeah. And you're trying to be like, no, dude, the reason I'm like this is because this is how we used to do it, and it was actually beneficial.
Yeah.
And so you're like, I kind of want to teach you, like you said, call. And, and McKinney calls me out on it. He's the best. He'll be like, too cool for school. You're fucking, what do they call, Gen Z-er. You can't fucking pick up the phone. Like, he'll say some shit, and then I'll call him. I'm like, what's up? You know? And Tim and I can hate each other for a week and call each other and laugh a week. You know, we have that relationship.
Yes.
And it's important. Because when I'm low, or when he's low, we can feed off each other and get out of our shit.
Totally, dude.
And a text message, I don't know if I got that.
It's not fulfilling.
Yeah. So
I mean, it's cool to get a check in, but like, you know, for the last probably since 2017, even before that, you know, if it wasn't for phone calls from some of my community to be like, dude, are you good, bro? Like, you're dealing with some heavy shit.
Yeah.
You know, I would have been way more depressed than I was. And just having that human connection and knowing that somebody out there is thinking about you and caring about you and picking up the phone and being like, fuck, bro, where you been? Like, I've done it, dude. I feel like I'm going radio silence. I did it, you know, probably for the last 6 months. I was like, you know what? I'm dealing with some shit that I'm tired of talking about.
Right.
Like, you know, my one buddy that I was talking to one time, he's like, okay, dude, so what's good though? And I was like, well, this, this, and this. He's like, then focus on that. And I was like, all right, coach. You know, we laughed or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, dude, like, if it wasn't for my wife, Shelby, now, you know, it's like, to be this anchor, to be this light, to be this focus. I mean, you know, kind of like your wife, you know, it's like calling me out on my shit. Like, no one has ever been able to get in my head the way she does and motivate me the way she does because there's a mutual level of respect, you know, and she's super tapped in energetically, you know, and she's really good with our kids. And it's just like, fuck, dude, this is so good, man.
Yeah.
But not getting phone calls from people you think you should be getting phone calls from. And this is something I learned a while ago. Just because somebody's not in contact with you, just because you haven't heard from but somebody in 6 months, doesn't mean shit, as we're talking about the emergency outlet. No, so, but the thing is, it's like, I learned this because I was going through some heavy, heavy family stuff for a while. And I realized, simultaneously, while I was going through this shit, this dude was going through gnarlier shit. And here I am judging, like, the fuck, this dude doesn't even care. He's not even checking in. What the fuck? So it made me realize, like, never pass judgment. You never know, man. Just because you see somebody posting some shit on Instagram, you don't know if that dude's just fronting. And on the sidelines, 100%. He's over there just like, oh my God, my fucking life, dude. How am I going to get a job? What am I going to do? Da-da-da-da. My wife cheated on me. My fucking kids are stressing me out. You know, I don't have this. I don't have that. Like, fuck, what am I going to do? It's like, you never know. So just reach out. And know that sometimes some dudes, especially in our generation, are like, I'm good, bro. But I think over the last few years, after we lost so many people, a lot of us are like, fuck, bro, I'm struggling.
Yeah.
Like, especially now with the economy and everything that's going on, so many people are like,
yeah,
dude, I don't even know what the fuck I'm doing, bro. I got all these degrees. I got this and that, and I can't even fucking get a job. You know, the lady at the fucking shopping market the other day, I'm getting ready to go through the self-checkout, and she's like, I'm right here. I was like, hell yeah. Human connection. I said this to her, human connection. And she's like, yeah. I was like, wow. She's like, you know, people are losing it. People are going through this self-checkout thing. She goes, yeah. And she goes, and times are hard. We need connection. She goes, you know, I used to work corporate. I had a really good corporate job. I got laid off. Now I'm working here at Target as a checker. Not that there's anything wrong with these people, but I was a high-level executive. and now I'm working Target and some other place. I don't remember if she was sick. I was like, whoa. People are hurting, man. And if people go back to unity, respect, and I pray every day, you know, God, universe, creator, whatever you are, man, permeate compassion to the hearts and minds of every soul on this planet, because there's so much fucking evil here right now.
Yeah.
Like, you can... what the fuck are we doing?
Yeah.
To each other, to the planet, to the animals. But then you look in history. Humans are fucking dark, bro. We've been doing some dark shit since fucking day one.
For sure.
You know, but it's like, okay, there's darkness. How are we going to show up?
Yeah.
You know, for you to be who you are on this planet, dude, and what you give to people and the devotion you put into this Phil Shaw, you know, celebration of life documentary, whatever label, it doesn't even matter. It's Phil. It's like people need to honor other people.
Yeah.
You know, and when you have done four skateboarding on a peripheral with not getting your flowers, it's like, bro, like I told Jacob Rosenberg, it's like, you haven't gotten your flowers. This is your time to get your fucking flowers, bro. And people, not that they should, but people need to know like how much you've contributed to help other skateboarders live their lives as human beings and to their careers and to their video parts and everything. Everything you've done from High Speed for the last 30 fucking almost years, dude. It's like, acknowledge and respect the magnitude of what your catalog is and what you've done. And you've seen people come and go. You've dealt with Jake, you've dealt with Fausto, you're in there with Tony and the other guys, and it's like, okay, but you're the last main real
it's
dude.
It's crazy. Yeah, thank you.
So respect the fucking elder in the building, hook them up lovely, and you know, let them live. And watch how much more he can contribute. And let this dude lead the way for all these other guys to come in and be like how Bryce was and Mofo was and KT was. Like, let you be the dude who comes in. It's like, yeah, if this dude's doing this, this doing this. Like, you're the fucking general manager of the whole fucking media scenario.
Mm. Yeah, I'm down. No, I appreciate that. It's crazy that we're coming up on 45. Well, no, it is 45 years this year that the mag's been there. And I don't say this to like pat myself on the shoulder, but like I've been there 30 years out of 45.
Yeah.
And like no contest, Bryce, Mofo, those guys have done way more than me for Thrasher, but I've been there longer than anybody.
I wouldn't say
and it's crazy to think like, no, but like, here's the thing. And I always tell people this, like, you have to respect your history and you have to respect the guys that were shoveling the holes before there was electronic shit. Like, these dudes made freeways so we didn't have to go like this. We can go straight A to B. And you have to understand that they might not have done as much as you, like your portfolio, but they did so much work to make it as rad as it was. And this is what I say too. You're not working at Thrasher to help Thrasher. You're working at Thrasher because you fucking want to be part of this. It's already Thrasher. You're not coming in like, I'm going to make this better. That's why I'm here. Fuck off, dude. Like, you know, like this is Thrasher, dude. Yeah. We're the Bible. We're like this bigger than it's not anybody. And Jake used to even say it to Jake's credit. I ain't Thrasher. Fausto ain't Thrasher. This guy ain't Thrasher. It's bigger than all of
it's
us.
It's skateboarders that are Thrasher magazine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm glad you said that because, you know, guys like KT and Fish and Mofo and Fausto and, you know, even Blackheart that helped everything in the beginning, they set the standard. They set the mold. It's there. Mm. And the momentum's there. And sometimes other people changing of the guards, whether it was going to be Phil or now it's Burnett is in there. Mm. It's like, you got to know how to drive it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, and it's going to have to evolve, but like you just said, respect the people who have laid the foundation and created something that's beyond any person in the building, but those people that are in the building from day one that have helped build it, honor them, respect them. And that's something that I think is lost in humanity on so many different levels. And in the context of skateboarding, it's like, fuck yeah, Hall of Fame. Yeah, it's one night. Yeah, you get a little trophy, but the skateboard industry, you know, is like, wow, let me look this dude up. Like, what did he really do?
Yeah, you know? It's interesting.
And if they even do that, you know, It's like, okay, cool, man, rad. But it's like when you're with your somebody like yourself that's at high speed, Thrasher Magazine, it's like look at the catalog, look at the resume. What more do you want to do, bro? What can we do to help you out? What's next? Mm-hmm. What do you see? What do you see for Thrasher? Yeah, Thrasher's Thrasher, but like I'm sure when Burnett's picking out who's going to be on the cover, he's got an idea. He's directing. Then you're the one that's directing, like, okay, this is how the video stuff could be going. This is how this is the kind of documentary we could actually start doing. Yeah, I did this Phil one. Fuck, let's do one on whoever.
Yeah.
Omar Hassan, dude.
That still dude going.
Yes.
The ripping, Energizer Bunny Rabbit.
You know?
It's crazy.
There's dudes out there, you know, or going into like the East Coast dudes and like Rodney Smith.
Mm-hmm. You know, to help keep skateboarding alive. And that goes back to Fausto and Eric. Skateboarding's fucking dead. In early 80s. Fuck it. We're going to do a contest. It's going to be grimy. Let's go.
Yeah.
We're going to do independent trucks. We're going to call up fucking Novak and Denike and be like, we got Blackheart. Let's do this.
Yeah.
You know, but take care of the people. These companies, it's like, take care of the industry that's taking care of you.
Mm-hmm. We're only here once. It's like all this shit that happened. I mean, we've lost so many people, and, yeah, and that made me have this weird pet peeve about the shit. But it's like, I get so pissed when people are like, oh, once the guy's gone, he was my best friend, blah, blah, blah. You never fucking even liked the guy when he was around. Like, he never knew you had these feelings. Whether you had them or not, I don't know. But you definitely never let him know that. And so let people know while they're here that they matter to you. And I think that that's a huge, good, like, thing to, you know, end this whole thing on. The thing that we always ask everybody, and I think this would be a great way to kind of end it with skating and just celebrate. Yeah. Is doesn't have to be the number one, but when I ask you this question, what comes to mind? The raddest thing you ever were there in person for to see happen on a skateboard.
Wow.
Like, a lot of times I'm like, dude, I saw Danny Way jump off the Hard Rock guitar, you know, like Greco switch frontside flip
the Lincoln. The raddest thing ever?
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't have to be the rat, like one of the things that you're like, that's in my top five, you know, like, because you've seen a million things, you've been, but, you know, whether it was like some crazy contest or you went somewhere and some dude did, like, were you there? Here's one I think you were there for, was in Vancouver when Wade did the transfer and the snake run the opposite way that everyone else did into the deep, like. I remember that, like, AP did it the other way, but Wade was like, nah.
Yeah, and Alex Chalmers.
Yeah. So I just, like, something that you're like.
Can I do a top five, maybe?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so I was just talking to my brother about this yesterday. Like, when we spent, I think it was maybe a month or so, maybe it was a hunt somewhere at the 8th Street house, going to this guy Andy's ramp with Danny and Alfonso Rawls, anyway, and Alfonso Rawls. And this is the first time I think I really saw Alfonso skate vert. I saw him skate mini ramp and street. He was like, he's one of the original ATVs. I don't think he gets enough credit for how much he contributed to technical skateboarding on vert. But this dude was doing like kickflip 540s, I think back then, stalefish 540s, varial 540s. I was like, oh my God. And then just annihilating the lip.
Right.
That was just like,
okay, yeah.
Yeah, that was one.
I remember stoked on his parts.
Seeing Steve Douglas basically invent lip tricks, like hurricanes, sugar canes, feeble grinds on vert.
The new deal, right?
Yeah.
The nose grind of lip slide.
Yeah, all the stuff that he did was profound. And then I think being there when the Gons did the Gons channel before it was the Gons channel.
Were you there?
Yeah. Being there when, I mean, me and Mike are in the background, I think it's September 86, I just looked it up. Thrasher Magazine, Gons and Otis hauling off the top of the pyramid. We're standing on the pyramid.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, that was like game changer day for me.
Oh, dude.
And then,
I'm just gonna, you can continue, but I'm just gonna say that's your answer in case you ever get asked again.
the gods all ain't the gods. It's like,
yeah, the gods all ain't the gods.
You know, stamp that.
Yeah. But, you know, everything about, you know, being part of the Embarcadero and seeing that would happen.
Yeah, big shout out to Jake Rosenberg, who's finishing up. This is the reason Greg's up here today, is they're finishing up. Jacob just did the book, and he's interviewing these guys.
Yeah.
There's probably going to be tons of, like, I don't know what he's got in the works, but there's videos, there's microphones, and there's a star-studded cast from Kelch to Carroll Brothers to, who did we see? Arco and Carl Watson are down there, so look for that.
Yeah, it's going to be fun, man. It was really fun to be a part of that. Yeah. I mean, I'm in your house, dude. All these years later.
Yeah.
And to me, to see now where you're at in your life, still in the mix, still doing what you love, still part of skateboarding. And to me, this is a success. Mm. So to me, this is one of the best times of my fucking life. To see my friends take it to the next level, do what they do. And the fact that you started this podcast and just having fun. I remember you talked about it a while ago, like, yeah, dude, you want to do the podcast? I'm like, yeah, but I don't want to do it on, you know, Zoom or anything like that, yeah, dude. I want to be in person, dude, because the connection that you and I have beyond our names being the same.
Yeah, Greg on Greg.
It's just like, yeah, dude, this is fucking awesome, dude. And I'm so happy for you, man. You should be proud of yourself. And like, this is good, dude. Thank you for your contribution to skateboarding, to my life, to the community, to the culture and everything. It's fucking awesome.
Appreciate it. All the people in our, you know, this isn't butter each other up time, but
sure, like,
honestly, without a doubt, Phil and Paul were so huge for me, and Fausto and you, but you first, and then Fausto, when Phil died, giving me the opportunity to do something that, if I was being honest at the time, was way above my, like, I ain't qualified for this. I'm down to try it because this is the pinnacle of what I want to do. Like, are you kidding me? When Phil died, Jake came up to me. We're all sitting there. Keith Cochran, you came up to me and you said, you got sunglasses on? What are you, a pussy? You crying? I was like, yeah, I'm crying. But right after that, Jake came up to me and he's like, you're going to work for the mag now. And if I didn't interview myself, I don't want to be in the documentary I'm making. But if I was going to say anything, the impact of that and the moment of, like, Jake Phelps is one gnarly dude, very intimidating, not very friendly, all the things that you would think that come along with him. And you have this position at Think that you're pretty comfortable in, you've been doing it for a while, but you just lost kind of the glue and you have this opportunity. It wasn't instantaneous for me to say yes. And I have anxiety. I have a lot of anxiety, probably more than your brother. I don't know how much he has, but I got a lot too. So, but yeah, and taking that opportunity and just doing the best you can. But like,
yeah,
you, every time me and you got into a talk, it was like, dude, you're going to get yourself on a plane. That's what you're going to do. You're going to open up this whole thing to things. And you would always, you seriously were the most, come on, dude, come on. Like, and I tell it to the guys at Thrasher now, like, I need a fire. I need a guy that's like, hey, dude, and get you hyped. Like, I don't need headphones and, like, solitude. I need, like,
community.
Yeah, and Jake was the same way. He would come in and be like, where the fuck is it? I was like, what do you mean? We just did it last night. I gotta, give me time to make it. He'd be like, I need that today. I'd be like, fuck, you know, it's J. Jonah Jameson and shit. You're like, okay, but it would spark you to be like, this guy cares about what I'm doing. I want to impress him.
Exactly.
And all that shit matters. So
it does,
big shout out to you. Shout out to Keith, Paul and Phil for sure. And just everybody who's been a part of the whole thing and that we're all still here.
Yeah, man.
You know?
I feel really blessed and lucky to still be here.
Yeah.
And not give up.
Yeah.
We're skateboarders. Get the fuck back up, dude.
I like that. Yeah. Shout out to Suicidal Tendencies.
Heck yeah. My soundtrack of my youth.
Dude, thank you so much. We love you, brother.
Of course, man. Thank you.
Greg on Greg in the mornings every Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
Let's do this.
Yes.
Yes. Right on, bro.
Thank you.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Oro Coffee. That's some damn good coffee. Order one or six bags at orocoffeeroasters.com.
Y'all like music? Because you're listening to SMFM.
Welcome, welcome everybody in here, out there, up there, around the way, and up in here and down there. Welcome to this installment of SMFM, where this week we're going to bring you a band from Maryland on the East Coast. All right, and well, I'm not quite sure how to say this. Skank number nine. Skank no nine. Skank nine. Skank no nine from Maryland, playing their song Requiem Earth. This is off their EP, The Loose Connection. I want you all to hear it first on SMFM. Take it away, Skank no nine. We'll be right back. Somebody booked them at Gilman Street. We're not getting crap through SMFM, and I'm very pleased with this. This is high-quality underground music. And we just listened to Skank No 9 from Maryland. You can find out everything you need to know about them at Skank No 9. Do they have ties to skateboarding? How did I hear about them? Do they have ties to Talking Schmidt? You be a researcher. And start on Insta. Great song. Great snare sound. Sometimes that perks my ear up when I hear some, you know, drum shit. All right? All right. I love you. See you soon. Pieces.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talking Schmidt. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, or anywhere you get your podcasts. When you subscribe, you'll get notifications every Tuesday of new episodes the minute they become available. Also, please leave reviews and a 5-star rating. It's the best way to help the show grow. All of the episodes will always remain free, but if you would like to help support the show, you can do so at talkingschmidt.com, where you can pick up some merchandise like t-shirts, beanies, hats, and stickers. The website has an entire archive of all of the episodes, with extra photos and videos. Email us with any suggestions, comments, or ways that the show may have improved your life at talkingschmidt@gmail.com. All interviews are conducted, edited, and produced by Schmitty. The intro music is Mary's Cross by the band Nature. A very special shout out goes to the executive director, Cheryl Camisa.
Shout out.
Love it!
This is Talking Schmidt, where the Rolodex is deep, but the conversation is deeper.
Keep the wheels greased.